Hello, everybody. Welcome to NYPD Blue Balls. My name is Kirk, and also here is Kyle, but he's also really in New York.
Yeah.
Also here to talk about NYPD Blue is our dad, Papa Asher.
Hello.
And I don't know if we'd watch NYPD Blue unless Dad had watched NYPD Blue when we were younger, and we caught some episodes. So we're here to talk about episode 3, another nailed it title, Brown Appetit. How does this one open again? I cannot remember. Isn't it just Sipowicz bugging that guy at the hotel?
Yeah. He goes to the hotel
and walks in.
Giardella, and then he gets mad at Giardella because he says, like, oh, Giardella says something like,
I got 5-star meals.
I've got 3 dirty movie channels and 24-hour room service. And then Sipowicz throws a potted plant above his head, and it falls on top of him. And he's like, yeah, why don't you mix that in with your hair and wear it to court or something like that. Basically, and then it cuts to back at the station house. Sipowicz starts bitching that he doesn't get to do anything. He's still stuck in taking phone calls. And Kelly's like, well, you know, just be cool with Fancy. And Fancy's like, why'd you go over there? I can't put you back on duty if you keep being an asshole, basically.
But Sipowicz does have that sweet group of lines where he's like, he says, no, I got a whole lot of work today. I got to do something with these little pieces of yellow paper with glue on them, and I got to work on my paperclip chains. And it's really funny and sarcastic. It's a good Sipowicz moment.
That would be...
But then...
Hold on, we got a quote, I think, from...
That would be little yellow note reminders with glue on the back. Because apparently they couldn't say
Kelly and Martinez. But then we meet Medavoy right after that.
That's right, Medavoy has a dog. I think it's the only time... Is this the only time they mention this dog? Because I don't remember him coming back.
It's the only time the dog's in the show, but I know he mentions it again.
But Medavoy is a detective that will be in the show for the rest of this series, really. But he's in this episode, then again in episode 5, and then he's in through the whole thing.
True. After episode 5, they start making him a more secondary characters.
But the case that Kelly and Martinez gets is...
Oh, real quick, before we move on, here's an example of why Sipowicz is racist.
Okay, you got Dad's attention.
Kelly goes to talk to him before him and Martinez go out on their call.
Mm-hmm.
And Sipowicz is all pissed off, and then he says something like, he's like, oh, because that African-American hump in there won't let me go out on it. There's no need to mention his race. That's why Sipowicz is racist.
Just a description.
Bullshit. All Sipowicz has to do... Well, then later on, I'll tell you. Later on, him and Fancy have a man-on-man talk, and Sipowicz says, like bosses, something along those lines. And then Fancy straight up is like, wow, it didn't take you that long. And he's like, I'm supposed to be free to express my opinions. There's no need to describe the color of his skin if you don't like him as a boss. So that's why it shows that he's racist and bigoted.
Well, I'll speak to that, because what he said is, you have the same problem that all of you people have. And he goes like, what do you mean you people? And he says, black bosses. That's not necessarily against his African-American race.
Okay, but fair enough on that one.
What he's saying is black bosses act differently than white bosses. That's not to say that he doesn't like black bosses. That's to say he doesn't like how they act because they're black bosses.
I see no one's touching the African-American hump one, though, because that, there's no need to call out his race when he's angry.
If he was racist, he would have used a different term.
Max.
Come on, guys. He's racist.
He's not racist. He's ignorant.
It's okay that he's racist.
He's ignorant.
And not racist?
Not racist.
He's racist.
He's not. He's ignorant.
I think the difference is maliciousness, right?
Right.
Because he's not maliciously hateful of races. It's just he doesn't have much knowledge into the area of equality.
In a later episode in season 2, he's like, oh, I got a letter from John. You know, he's over guarding what those dot heads. That's racist.
Ignorant.
That's a racist way of describing Indians.
He doesn't know any better. That's what it is.
well,
it's his description of them, but it's not racist.
The season, but I don't want to get too far into the episodes and the seasons. But
yeah, we should.
Season, he specifically talks to Black and like, yeah, my dad didn't get beat up by one of yous, so all of my thoughts about you guys were wrong. So he admits himself that he had negative thoughts towards the African-American community, which is racism, guys.
No, he knew... Yeah.
Okay, we should... We got to table this discussion to talk about the episode Brown Appetit, okay, guys? Like, we're not going to solve it. Also, I mean, he is maybe not racist, but he definitely has racial problems. We can agree to that.
Okay, that's fair enough. That's halfway.
Okay, but let's talk about the... We gotta talk about the case, because the case that Kelly and Martinez work has a famous face in it, Michael Rapaport.
Yeah.
And how do we get to Michael?
And the
guy that's his brother?
His other brother returns in a later episode as someone who commits a crime, too.
Yeah, that's right. He's a returning actor. But the case is, an old woman's dead. Kelly, within 30 seconds, figures out it's the neighbor's sons, who are obviously druggies, using the free rent. It's one of the many reasons I don't like David Caruso's character, because he comes up with this information way too quickly, as opposed to the normal way the shows go, where guys actually, like, work a little bit harder than he does.
But, okay, I don't agree with that. I just think that he, with the information he was given, put together things, because that's what detectives do, like, that's their job, so it worked, but, okay.
This is also where James Martinez gets a little bit of, notoriety in the crew, because he jumps out a window for a guy.
Yeah, they call him Flying James Martinez.
Flying James Martinez. This is another thing about John Kelly. He's also bodyguarding in the same episode. He announces that he's going to do bodyguarding for a rich couple.
Uh-huh.
He's once again taking the A and the B story.
Yeah, and he starts bodyguarding that weird old lady. The chick that was in Just Shoot Me.
But you have to remember, this is only the third episode, and he was supposed to be the star.
We talked about that in previous episodes, but, like, at least once he leaves and Smith shows up, they at least distribute.
Right.
So it doesn't
In the very first year, it was going to be his vehicle.
But doesn't it make it seem like only things happen to him? Which is not, like, the way anything ever works. You know what I mean?
Yes, but that was on purpose.
But eventually they get rid of him and the show gets better. The point is...
Well, Dad, did you know, a little fun fact, John Kelly's original name on the show, like the original character name, was going to be Flynn. And the character was going to be played by Jimmy Smits from season one on, but he said no. And then they got David Caruso. And then after the show got popular, they asked Jimmy Smits to come, if they wanted to come back, and he said yes. So we could have had a show without the ginger.
That would have been okay with me.
But the only problem with that is there's a possibility, if it was Jimmy Smits all along, they would have killed Sipowicz in episode two. Because they never intended for Sipowicz to stay alive. But people found him so cool, so they kept him around. This episode has a couple firsts. We've already mentioned the first appearance of Medavoy, which is important because I like Medavoy. Kyle hates him.
Medavoy's a bitch.
It's the first ever Sipowicz run-in with, like, an authority figure, which is Fancy. It's an important moment for Sipowicz as well as Fancy, because Fancy starts to realize...
Oh, another racist thing about Sipowicz. He says something along the lines of, hey, it's not like I'm asking you to go out for ribs or something.
And? And? He says?
He
didn't
like
say fried
food,
chicken.
Shit like that. That's a total racist thing.
No, it's not.
Totally racist.
Okay, but the point...
Come on, man.
The point of that conversation is...
Come on!
The point of that conversation was... Fancy sees that Sipowicz is trying to be better, so he gives him a break, which he has no reason to. And because of that break, we get the first ever Sipowicz actually interrogating someone. It's the first episode we get to see Sipowicz in the room with a possible suspect, and he does one of the coolest things where he lifts the dude's sneakers because he notices that they're clean, so he's like, oh, you probably washed the blood off, right? And then drops the guy and goes, watch your balance. What other famous faces? The chick from, what was it, Just Shoot Me, you said?
Yeah, the lady that Kelly has to guard is from Just Shoot Me, and she's uppity, And she's running her mouth from the get-go. No, so she gets slapped around a little bit.
Now
she gets that early mid-90s slap around thing where it's like, yeah, I'm gonna give you a black eye and it's okay, because that's just the time that we live in. Because you went running your mouth.
Well,
at the charity ball event.
I have a question, because I asked Dad about this, because she's also in episode 4, and we were in the same place when he was watching that. Her name's Wendy Malick. Did you think that she was actually hit? Because I think you can be convinced that she was never hit.
No, I think she was hit, because when you get to episode 4 and she explains what happened.
You believe that, though?
I believe that, because of the way, because when John Kelly kind of tells her, like, you need to be honest, you need to be truthful about what happened, you need to say this, and then she kind of goes into it. You could see that there was some truth behind it, that he maybe was coming after her. So I believe she got hit.
But I remember watching just from episode 3, not even including 4, the way she speaks is so robotic. Even when she's at the ball and it's supposed to be like a terrifying moment that, oh, she's talking to the woman that is the mistress of her husband. Mm-hmm. Like, normally, I would imagine a woman would be pretty upset and crazy, but she's very stoic, very robotic, very, like, Spock-like. And then when she calls John Kelly late at night when her husband's not there, she's got the bruises and she tells the story without any emotion either.
But when she talks to the chick in the red dress, you can tell, I took it that she was a little nervous because she was about to, like, put all this shit on blast.
I don't know. See, I don't agree. I think, I mean, there's a way to, your views are very valid, and that's probably exactly what they're playing, is that she's actually beat up, and she's in this situation, and she shoots her husband eventually.
Then why are you making more of it?
But I'm watching it. But when I watch it, I see a wealthy woman who, the second she sees this new bodyguard, tells him, yeah, my husband's a piece of shit, embarrasses him in the charity ball, tells Detective Kelly all these stories. Detective Kelly never can confirm those stories with anybody. It's all based on her word. Then,
well, when he confronts the dude's kind of an asshole.
I didn't
when
even...
He basically is like, I'm quitting... He does that common thing that most wife beaters do, and when he says, you don't know both sides of the story.
But
you don't know that I was provoked. You don't know what she said. But
isn't it possible that they're into just, like, freaky bedroom games?
No.
No, because he's fucking somebody else. I don't think he's fucking
But
her.
We only know that... We only hear that he's having sex with somebody else from her. And she's trying to build a story to get John Kelly to shoot him.
No.
Because when they first meet and hang out... Or the first time she gets hit, Detective Kelly says, it sounds like you're asking me to commit a crime.
Well, no, because she says something, I don't remember the exact quote, but she says something along the lines where it's like, just because I have money doesn't mean I have opportunity to leave, or I'm happy. And so I think that is the telling line of their situation, because I think she wants to kill him because I think she's had enough of it. I think she's been beat up her whole marriage.
Right.
He's just sleeping around, and he's threatening her livelihood, and she has no way of getting out
and
of it.
And so far, it's not... the amount of love that she has for the lifestyle hasn't surpassed the hate for getting beat up.
Okay.
Yes.
I understand.
Yes,
I understand what both you guys are saying. And when we get to episode 4 and we get to, like, the resolution of this story, I want to explain my point better, because this is the second time I'm going through it. I think it's the second time you went through it, Dad. And I know that Kyle, I think this is his fourth run through. When I see the whole series from beginning to end, right after each other, and the fact that Kelly never talks to this dude for long enough to get the real story, and the way the fourth episode plays out, I don't think it's as easy as the dude's a woman beater and John Kelly is trying to help her out. I think it's way different. But I'll wait till the end.
When we get to season 4, we'll have another argument about it. But
episode
I understand where you're coming from, but I think you're wrong.
Yeah, that's fair. This is what this podcast is about, difference of opinion. You think Sipowicz is racist and Dad doesn't. Like, it's just the way it runs.
Sipowicz is racist.
He's not racist.
Okay, let's talk about another moral thing. Sipowicz. At the end of this episode...
Here's the thing, real quick. Mm-hmm. You can be racist, but, like, the thing is there are some people in there who are consciously racist, and then there are some people who are unconsciously racist. I think Sipowicz is unconsciously racist.
Would you say he has racial bias over racism? Would you say he has racial bias over racism?
What do you mean?
Well, racial bias is where you treat people differently based on their race, or you think about them differently based on their race. You're not necessarily hateful of them, filled with hate.
I think he looks down on people who aren't white.
No, he doesn't.
I don't think that he... The way he treats certain people of color that he arrests compared to other people sometimes shows that he's racist.
Come on, he just tipped the white guy over in the chair and said, watch your balance.
Well, that's because he's a drug dealer who killed an old woman.
Yeah, but he didn't call him a Caucasian hump. He didn't go after what his facial features were and his skin color. There was no need to go after fancy skin color. That's what I'm saying.
But he didn't go after
it. He just said it.
Also, it relates...
What I'm saying is like, if you're my boss and I'm talking to Kurt, and you're a Mexican guy, I'm not going to go, yeah, that beaner hump in there won't let me do this, this, and this. I'm going to go, no. That guy in there is a dick because he won't let me work this way. Doesn't matter if he's brown, black, white, or Asian.
That's why I'm saying.
Why does his skin color matter?
You're not ignorant. Sipowicz is.
Beaner is a slur.
Sipowicz is racist.
Beaner is a slur. And African-American is what you would say in a workplace. But also...
If I was to be like that Mexican asshole in there's no need to say Mexican is what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
He's just an asshole. His skin color doesn't matter.
I understand what you're saying, but within the context of this episode, the way he said African-American hump, I think, was in relation to the fact that he is a quote-unquote black boss. And black bosses have to treat their job differently because, as Fancy says... I think it did, because there's a moment he pauses before he says it. He's arguing with Kelly, and then he goes, that, and then he pauses. African-American hump in there, because he knows I gotta censor what I want to say, and I can't just say whatever I want.
Well, let's see.
Let's table.
As it progresses, we'll see. Because there are episodes in Season 2 where Jimmy Smits's character tells him that he is not comfortable with the way Sipowicz looks at certain races.
It's true. That is true.
When we get there, it'll happen. So we'll just get there slowly.
Jimmy Smits is a great character, but it doesn't mean he's 100% right all the time.
No, you're right. But when it comes to Sipowicz being racist, he kind of is.
He's not racist. Okay.
And I mentioned it before, it's the first ever we get to see Andy in a room. And as we go through more episodes, the best parts of the show, in my opinion, are when Andy is across the table from someone, sizing him up, getting the information, and sometimes, like we see in this episode, physically hurting dudes in a room, which is not technically, you know, legal.
Right, that's what I have. I have a note here, okay? Police brutality?
Oh, we're going to talk about police brutality. There's police brutality in episode 4 when we get to
it. Are we saying that that's okay? The police brutality is okay because he's such a cool character that if he wants to do that, that's cool.
Well, Sipowicz explains it later. Because someone watches him tune somebody up.
Yeah, that's the words they use.
You never tune anyone up on speculation. If you know they did it, it's okay. Which I'm okay with. Like, if you know
but
someone
you
murdered somebody and you got to tune
There's
them up.
There's always doubt.
And I told him, I told Kyle in a previous episode, I think there's an overarching theme where cops, and this is true of any group, especially if your job requires putting your life on the line. Cops look out for other cops before anybody else, almost. So, like, if Andy goes in and says, I'm going to tune this guy up, I'm pretty sure he's the guy that molested that boy and murdered him, everybody's going to go, okay, and they're going to pull down the shades and they're going to pretend it's not happening. And if anybody asks, then they're going to say it didn't happen. Which I think is a little more scary than just police brutality because, I mean, deep down... It's fucked up to say, but deep down, if you know they have, like, the... what's that guy's name? The Webster Killer? Spoilers for that. If they know they have the guy, and the guy is just not budging because he's a dick, and they go, well, we gotta, you know, resort to old-school methods...
Andy also explains that you have to know that if you do beat some guys, they're not gonna talk. Some guys will talk when they get beat, some guys won't, so you also have to know that difference. So, it just depends. I got no problem with it.
You got no problem beating suspects.
So, the Police arrest you for something that you didn't do, but they're convinced that you did do it. It's okay for them to beat on you.
Well, no, they wouldn't beat me because I'm white. There's a difference.
The kid in the room was white.
That's fucked up. The kid in the room was Michael Rapaport. He was a white dude.
Rapaport didn't get beat. Rapaport got tipped out of his chair.
Yeah, and like, his head hit the wall.
Let's slow down the police brutality on that, guys.
Really? He basically threw his head against the wall.
The only reason he did that is because the kid's too poor to have a lawyer that knows how to sue the department based on that.
That's a pretty big assumption.
No, but that's the truth. That's the truth. If it was like a rich kid, like they've had episodes with rich, affluent New Yorkers, they don't do anything to those people because they know they'll just get their lawyer in here and then shit will turn south. We got to get some like evidence. We can't just beat this guy into saying things. But the most important thing about this episode, the thing that we need to talk about, Sipowicz hears a guy having hooker troubles at the front desk of the police department. It's the very end of the episode. And he basically hears this guy's like, oh, I've been caught with a hooker. What about my wife and kids? I have a job at this hotel, which happens to be the same hotel that, what's his name? Gianna? I can never remember his name.
Girardella
is in. And Andy wants to fuck with Girardella. He just wants to. He has to, because he's getting off on a free ride. He basically tells the guy, in like the, and he's also super like swagger about it. Hey, you helped me out with this thing. Goodbye, your hooker charge. And I thought, I understand the point of this is to get Sipowicz with Medavoy's dog shit into Girardella's lasagna, which is a great joke. But to get there, they go, yeah, we'll just drop these charges, which will embarrass you and your family and ruin your job.
What's the point?
That's kind of fucked up, isn't it?
No, people do. Cops do that all the time. If you help them, they'll help you. You see it out throughout the whole season, the whole episode.
But what's fucked up about it is having the guy eat dog shit.
That's
fucked up about it.
No, the guy deserves to eat dog shit.
Doing a this for that, quid pro or whatever.
But the quid pro quo.
They do it all the time, like Kyle said. We'll help you help us there.
When they do it, it's usually for the prosecution of other criminals.
Right.
Not to benefit himself personally.
He had the opportunity.
It just seems fucked up for a character that's so good.
For him to do that, does that mean he's racist against Italians?
No, he's not racist against Italians, Dad.
Right.
He's racist, guys. Whatever you want to say, he's racist.
I don't think he's racist. But that's
totally, it's okay, he's racist.
Kyle, do you have any favorite quotes from this episode? Or moments?
Well, you're missing a big chunk of the story.
Oh, which is that?
Lekowski's dad gets caught. And indicted, and then at the end, he kills himself.
Basically, because if you remember, I think, is it this episode or the episode before where Kelly has sex with his wife in the shower?
This episode. Yeah. It just seems like this is what Kelly does.
Why does everybody want to screw this guy?
Well, what's weird is it's like Kelly's life is, I wake up, I go to the precinct, I have to talk to Sipowicz so he doesn't get fired, I go do something that's not police work, I go fuck my wife.
I talk to David Schwimmer.
I go fuck David Schwimmer, and then I fuck Lekowski, and then get mad at her.
Yeah, because this episode, he literally goes to the house. I don't remember why. Why does he go over to his ex-wife's apartment? There's a reason.
I don't think there's any explanation.
He goes to the apartment, and he walks in, and she's having a shower, and then he goes like, hey, you in here?
Do you need a towel?
Do you need a towel? And she goes, no, good. But basically, it's just a bunch of back and forth to get him naked for ABC in the shower.
He says, do you need a towel? She goes, no, I can get my own. And he goes, well, I just ran out of excuses to go in there. And then she's like you ever needed
an
excuse.
If you ever need any.
Boom, give me your dick.
And then
it pounces him.
And then,
give me that ginger bush all up in my vagina.
Then, your dad's here, by the way. And then
your dad's here too, Kirk.
He finds out Lekowski's dad is going to be indicted for being on Marino's payroll because the Girardella case is going to break open all of this mafia contact shit. And Lekowski's dad tells her about it, and she can't tell anybody Because nobody knows.
She wants to tell... Well, the thing is, she wants to tell Caruso, but Caruso's acting like a dick and ignores her, and then sees on the news that he got arrested, and then is like, oh, man, I'm sorry, I was being an asshole, but are you okay? Because your dad just got arrested.
Well, the thing that came to my mind is, that dude is a dirty cop.
Mm-hmm.
But so is his daughter.
And well, he doesn't know that.
I know, but she is. It runs in the family.
Yeah.
It's a family of dirty cops. They should be, like, all tossed.
But they don't. That's another weird thing is there's so many like back and forth who knows what, because her dad doesn't know that she killed Marino because Marino tried to get her on the payroll. So we find out later that her dad killed himself. David Caruso comforts her, and that's
LeBonnier.
Yeah, which is. Well, does he have sex with her this episode? Or
no,
does he just...
I think it fades out with them just sitting
on the steps,
on the step, and her crying,
which is the NYPD blue call sign for these people gonna bone again.
And that's what I was thinking is when my parents died, that wasn't my go-to feeling immediately.
Bone?
My parents died. I better have sex.
Well, I mean.
I don't think they had sex, guys.
They did. They left those stairs. They went inside.
No, because the next
get it together, Kyle.
When it starts out, she thanks him. She's like, thanks for being with me during a hard time. But it doesn't come off as like, oh, thanks for giving me that dick to make me feel better.
No, it comes after. It's there. Because they've already set it up that every female in the precinct wants to have sex with this guy.
Yeah, it's so weird.
Still not sure why.
Is there anything else that I missed, Kyle, or we missed? We got to talk
about?
Yeah,
a couple things I want to talk about.
Or Dad, what's up?
Okay. First of all, I don't know what you guys talked about in the first two, but I want to put the television show in context of television shows at the time. It was less than 5 minutes into the show, and Sipowicz had called that mafia dude a douchebag.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and called that girl a bitch.
And then... not too long after that, two characters, and I didn't write down their names, called each other asshole. I think it was when Fancy and Sipowicz were in there squaring off. For the day that the television came out at that time, that was having people fall off their couch. That was unheard of. You didn't say douchebag and asshole during network television, right? So that's one thing that I, you know, wanted to say. Hey, look, you got to understand the perspective of when this came out. Another thing is, they're playing a pretty big dichotomy of...
1993, it looks like.
Sipowicz, his character, because he's the badass and is going to go into the room with the Fancy and square off, but he's also going to be on the phone with some psychotic people and say, hey, this is our delusion technique. After you put your hangers on the windows and coat your ceiling with aluminum foil.
Yeah.
If you try this delusion technique and get it out of your mind, he's basically trying to help these people.
Mm-hmm.
And he agrees to take care of the dog.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So on one hand, he's this, you know, tough guy knocking people over, yelling at the boss. On the other hand, he watches a dog and he tries to help crazy people.
But like I was telling Kyle,
so they're trying to show you the two sides of them. They do that all the way through the series.
And that's true. And I was telling Kyle, like, when he gets shot after being drunk and he sobers up and then comes out of the coma or whatever it is, he is on his way to becoming just a different person. Because when you see him in the beginning of episode one, the dude's an asshole and he's not a Sipowicz that you want to watch. He's a Sipowicz that's, like, really messed up and mean and horrible. And then, once he gets sober and realizes the drinking makes him this way, is when he starts turning around and being a better worker and being a better coach to other detectives and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. And then one more thing I have, which is a little thing.
Okay.
Why does Sipowicz have an incredibly tough time matching a shirt with a tie?
Oh, that's just him, though.
Every episode. But come on.
The question you have to ask yourself is, why is he wearing a short sleeve collared shirt and a tie?
Right, that goes along with it. But they never match. He'll have green and orange. You know, it just doesn't go together.
You know, When I envision this podcast, I never thought that you would be the fashion police of it.
I'm not trying to be the fashion police. But look, he works with Kelly, who they've gone out of the way to make just be super sharp.
Yeah.
As a cop.
They
That's
do.
His partner. And to play off of that, here's a guy that cannot put a shirt and tie together.
Well,
to
I think to go back to what you're
and
saying,
they do it with Jimmy
it's
Smith.
Like that. When
Jimmy
people Smith. Are... I think
what?
It goes back to the thing where people are so smart and people are like their brains are just got a lot going on that like when they wear clothes, it's like they wear the same thing or they don't wear matching things. They just put clothes on to put clothes on.
Yeah, that makes
like,
sense.
Like, I think that's part of Sipowicz's thing. I think he's super smart and he's got like intelligence behind him and he's got a lot of things that are always running around in his brain that when it comes to his clothes don't matter.
No, see, I think he's
that's what I think.
He's a great cop. But he's not super smart.
No. Well, what I mean is like his job is being a cop. He's a cop 24/7, so he's always in cop mode. And then he's always in this now, he's in this I'm not drinking mode. So he has a lot going on in his head where it's like there's these constant thoughts and he's always like on edge and he's always trying to be a cop where I think, hey, when it comes to his clothes, it's like, who gives a fuck, just let me get to work.
How about this? Always wear a white shirt, and then no matter what tie you wear, it'll match.
Think about this. Think about the character of Sipowicz. If you want, because I read way too much into things. Sipowicz is divorced. He lives alone. He doesn't have a wife. He also has nobody in his personal life that's
Wait. So what you're going to tell me is his wife laid his clothes out like
No. Listen.
And once she was gone, he can't take care of himself.
Listen to my words. It's a combination of what Kyle's saying and my own thought. He's now on his own. He's starting to not be drunk every day, right? And he's never even taken into account what he's wearing. The reason is because he was on autopilot with booze. So now he's getting back into the swing of things. It's probably going to fix it up a little
bit. Okay, but jumping forward,
but
it never gets better.
He's still, yeah.
He's also, I think,
like a 50-year-old man who just doesn't give a fuck.
Well, 40. 40 like, this year.
Whatever, he's not going to be judged by his clothes. He's going to be judged by the person he is. So that doesn't matter to him. You know what I mean? Like that's not what matters to him. What matters to him is solving a case and being a cop, not the suit he's going to wear. That's what I think. But I agree with you. Like, don't wear a polka dotted tie with a striped shirt. You look like a dumbass. But
it's a lot like what Kyle said, where people that are really really skilled in something. Sometimes, like, almost like autistic people are artistic people, people that are very creative. Sometimes they view other things in life like they're just not important, like social, being sociable, things like that. Like, Sipowicz is very antisocial. He's very anti-change. He's very also stubborn as a character.
He's not stubborn.
So I bet people have told him, hey, that doesn't match. And then just like he said to... James Martinez in the second episode is like, what are you, some kind of asshole? I bet, because we're going to eventually see John, the best PAA they ever had. And John's a gay dude, but he's also very stylish, very cool. He probably said once to Sipowicz, hey, you might want to...
What do you mean, there ain't no probably, you don't know.
He probably did.
No.
But the point is, Sipowicz was like, don't worry about my clothes, John. I'm here to work.
Okay, and one last thing, very subtle. So the two things. The show starts, and they start showing flashes of different characters.
Uh-huh.
Sipowicz is first. Then
uh-huh.
comes John Kelly.
Uh-huh.
When they roll the names,
it's
Caruso's first, but when they do the other thing, Sipowicz was first.
Uh-huh.
Why would they put him first if you're saying they never intended to keep him?
Well, I don't know. Probably just whoever edited the intro.
Okay. And then...
No, right? On the first episode, I don't think Sipowicz is first. I think Caruso's first. But you normally get put in by importance in the story based on, like, what it's going to be. And in the first episode, Sipowicz is important because you establish, like, John Kelly and everything that's going. But I read that Sipowicz was going to die, and then Kelly was going to stay and then basically turn into the new, like... I've been here the longest. Sipowicz is the guy that's like, I've been here the longest. This is my precinct. I'm the old man. And he was going to move on and Kelly was going to come in.
Okay, but it's during the credits, so I don't think it has anything to do with the particular episode. And then the last thing, and very subtle, you know when he goes up to the hotel room and he's walking down the hallway and the maid goes walking past him? He turns around and checks out her rear.
Well, yeah, he's a red-blooded American man.
Well, yeah, he says something. He says something to John about Lacalse at one point, where he's like, "Let's talk about Lacalse." He's like, "What do you want? What do you mean? Let's talk about?"
Oh, that's the fourth episode, yeah.
And he's like, he goes, "Come on, like, are you dating or what?" He goes, "You're a divorcee. You can do that. I mean, if she was at a topless bar, I'd probably go talk to her." Like he's if she worked at a topless
bar, I
would talk to her too. So
no.
He's like that. He's just a gross old man.
Gross old man.
On that note, Kyle, do you have any closing statements or thoughts?
No, not really.
As we go to episode 4, it's just this rich bodyguard situation.
But then again, to your point, it's like with the punching the woman, it's just that was the time. Like it was during that time in New York, it's okay. Like even now, it's kind of weird when you walk around New York. If you are walking, like I notice it all the time. If there's a girl walking in front of me, and we walk by somewhere, on average, 4 or 5 guys are gonna say something to her. Like, "Hey, what's up, girl?" Like, "Hey, smile, you look prettier." Like, shit like that. That's just like a New York thing. It's something I don't get and I don't understand, but I've seen tons of times. I've been with Maria sometimes walking, and I'll maybe be looking at my phone and she'll be a little bit ahead of me, and guys will say stuff to her, and it's like, "What the fuck?" Like, and then they'll just keep walking. Like, they're not trying to get any. They're not trying to, like, say anything. Like, they'll just see a girl and be like, "Hey, nice tits," and then, like, just keep walking. Like, it's, like, a Saturday afternoon. It makes no... It's so weird to me. But that's just, like, that's just a New York thing, staring at her ass. That's just something they do.
All right.
All right. Anybody got any unfinished business with Brown Appetit? Nailed it?
Nailed it.
Nothing? I'm Kirk. Kyle wants to speak for himself, even though it's hard to cue him when he's in a different state.
I'm Kyle.
And that's Dad.
That's me.
We're out. Thanks, everybody, for listening to this episode of NYPD Blue Balls. If you're interested in listening to more NYPD Blue Balls, head over to AsherBrothersPodcast.com, where every single episode will be posted, as well as every single episode of the flagship show, Asher Brothers Podcast. You could also find us on Twitter at AsherBrosPod, where we tweet about that show, as well as the NYPD Blue show, which you just listened to. So thank you, and have a great week.